So a few things before we get started. So we have these offering envelopes. Most of you know yours, and you pick them up. And so what we do is the out-of-town ones we mail that have been picked up. And then there are about 35 to 40 that were in town. So I kind of went on a little journey 2 days this week delivering offering envelopes to people's houses. And I'd kind of knock on the door. It'd be kind of funny to say, well, hello, Pastor Dave. How are you doing? And I'd say, I'm great. And here are your offering envelopes. And their faces just droop, you know? Oh, no. And then, of course, I get all these stories about their giving habits. But I say, look, just use your offering envelope. So anyway, we're about done. I've got about three or four of these left. And that part of my job will be complete. So I sent an email out this week about Easter. When is Easter? April 12. Let's hear it again. April 12. Just remember 1-2. It's easy to remember. April 1-2. And guess what? Somebody has a birthday on Easter this year. Walter Hilton has a birthday April 12th. So we want to remember. Make sure to remember Walter April 12th. So that's good. But April 12th is Easter. And then we've got, Shrove Tuesday, Ash Wednesday coming up soon. So it's going to be, a great Lent time. And then for Easter as we prepare. I don't know if you've been watching the impeachment stuff on TV, but I got a little quote from the newspaper, Senator Kennedy. You know, the impeachment managers, whatever they're called, they go for a long time. I mean, hours and hours and hours. And so they interviewed this Senator Kennedy of Louisiana, and he said it was like being in church. And let me tell you what he said. He said, as Senator Kennedy of Louisiana even brought church into his remarks at the end of one day, he said, very few souls are saved after the first 20 minutes of a sermon. So I won't go over 20 minutes my entire life from now on. But, you know, there's nothing going to, he says, no one's going to be saved after the first 20 minutes of a sermon. But anyway, here we go. So we hear in the New Testament where we say that Jesus is related to a prophecy of the Old Testament. And so this is a great example today of the Old Testament and the New Testament where they are linked together. So we have Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah. He's talking about something that is happening in the past. And then we're going to run to Matthew, where Matthew says this is Jesus, and Jesus is fulfilling the prophecy of Isaiah. So that's part of what we're going to be talking about today, as well as about Christ shining God, Christ's light, and then a follow me. So I want us to go back a few years. Imagine that we're living in the year 732 B.C., not A.D., but B.C., 372 B.C., a long, long time ago. And we're in the time of the prophet Isaiah. We're living in the kingdom of Zebulun. And Zebulun later became what is known as Galilee, which is where Jesus did most of his ministry, was in Galilee, around the Sea of Galilee. And so imagine if we are living in 732 B.C., and we are living in a very, very dark time. And why is that? Because we know that there's this group, there's this nation, the Assyrians are ready to come upon our land where we live and are just going to have total devastation in our lives. Our homes are going to be destroyed, our families are going to be destroyed, everything, lose our jobs, food, clothing, everything. They're just going to come in and obliterate the society in which we live. It is very, very dark. But we have this prophet Isaiah who is saying to these Jews that I can offer you some hope and some peace. And he says these words. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. So they are waiting for this person to bring light and to shine God's light and brightness into their lives. Think of those words again. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. And then if we go a little further in this book of Isaiah, this particular chapter, then it talks about what we hear at Christmas and Advent. For unto us a child is born, Unto us a child is given, and he shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. They are waiting for this Messiah to come into their lives and to save them from this darkness and despair in which they are living. So now we're going to go forward 700 years to the Gospel of Matthew, and we are told in the scripture that Jesus is making a point to settle in Zebulun, which is now Galilee, so that he can fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah. And it is there that he is going to bring light to people that are living in darkness. I was thinking this week about some scriptures that deal with light. There is a lot of light in the Bible. I think about in Genesis, let there be light, and there was light. I think about my favorite psalm that we read today, Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Of whom shall I be afraid? And then the verse that just touches me so much, it says, even if your father and your mother turn against you, God will always be there for you. Imagine that in our lives when we feel that everyone has left us, that we are totally alone in life, God is there for us. God is there to pull us out of the pit. God is there to help us pick up the pieces and move on in our lives. Another one that touches me is John 1, the fifth verse. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I've mentioned you before, one of my favorite movies is The Mission. And The Mission is about in South America where the Guarani are the native inhabitants there. And then you have the Portuguese and the Spanish conquistadors who come there. And there are the Jesuits, the Catholics who have gone to South America. And they have started churches and they've started farms for people to live. And the conquistadors come and just destroy all of those Jesuit settlements. And at the end of that movie, the last line that is at the movie frame, it says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I don't know what you've been watching on TV the last few days, the impeachment. It's darkness, friends. I don't know what you think about it, what political party we are. It is darkness. And this impeachment is a darkness that has come over our country and has created a darkness in our lives. I turn it on at 1 o'clock and I listen to the prayer of the Senate chaplain. His name is Chaplain Barry Black. And I hope these senators and these lawyers and these House managers are listening to his prayers. The one that touched me was this past week where he said he was praying to God that this impeachment proceeds and ends according to God's will and not our own. We have to put our faith in God, friends. We have to put our faith in God. God is going to break this darkness that has come into our land. I have on my office door a little quip, two great truths.
And it's something that all of our politicians should pay attention to.
It says, two great truths. One, there is a God. Two, you're not God. I look at these people, they think they're God. They're not. They're frail, sinful human beings. They are not God. And they could use some brightness and shine in their lives. But we need light. We need light. Let me share with you a story. We have two stories for today. We have English as second language starting this week. So we started registration this week, and I was talking to one of the teachers in level one. And she was telling me the story about she had a student that was illiterate in her own language, and was trying to learn English. And she was behind the rest of the class, so we got her kind of a private tutor to help her through this first semester of English. And she worked really hard on one thing, and that was to write her name in English. And it took her several weeks. But over a period of weeks, she is now able to write her name in English. And this teacher said you could just see the light come out of the darkness that was in her lives. Friends, we're bringing light to people who are living in darkness. We had our ministry of hope this morning. We had 60 folks come for breakfast, and then we had what I call table talk. We had table talk with around each of the tables, and we asked questions like, how do you get here? The bus, walk. What time do you get here to get in line? 4 a.m. 4 a.m. We had to ask suggestions to help with the line because we have people breaking in the line, and I'm not getting up at 4 a.m. to manage the line. We talked about the breakfast we served. Do they like the breakfast? Any suggestions? Some suggested having hash browns. We can do that. We offer toiletries, and these folks are just glad to have what we can offer them. But I was touched at, we got to about worship. And there are some people that think Ministry of Hope come to worship just to get their card. And that's not being fair. So we talked to them about, and they love to worship here. They have kind of created their own community of worship. And they pray. Many give a dollar in their offering envelopes when half of our congregation gives zero. Half in our congregation give zero. And here are folks that are poor and destitute that find some coins and a dollar bill to put in an offering plate, put in an offering envelope, seal it, write their name, write their dollar, put in the offering plate when it comes by. Friends, that is a witness. That is a group of folks that were living in darkness, and we have brought light to their lives. So think about the next part of the story is about where Jesus is going, and he knows that he can't do what he can do all by himself. He needs to find some help. So he finds two brothers and he says, come, follow me. And it says that they drop their nets. They don't take their nets with them. What do? They drop their nets immediately and go and follow Jesus. Then he finds two more. He says, come and follow me. And it says they drop their nets and they say goodbye to their father, which means they're done. They're with Jesus 100% now. No more going back. And Jesus is asking us, what are we going to do to follow Jesus? I was thinking about a hymn this week. It came into my mind actually yesterday, and I thought, wow, what a great hymn. I'm sorry we didn't choose it. But then I thought, well, that's okay, because I can just help you with it a little bit. It's titled, Where He Leads Me. Anybody know that hymn, Where He Leads Me? Let me find it in here. You don't have to find it. I'm going to find it. Where He Leads Me, 338. So let me tell you the story about this hymn, because hymns have great stories. It was written in 1890 by a guy named E.W. Blandy. And E.W. Blandy was a Salvation Army officer. They don't call them preachers, they call them officers. So he was a Salvation Army officer, and he was given two opportunities where to serve. One place was he could serve a place like Doolin Church, a well-established, well-maintained church. And they said, or you can go to the slums of New York City and minister to the folks in Hell's Kitchen. And you've been to New York City, Hell's Kitchen is not the best place to live. And you know which one he chose? He didn't choose the Doolin type church. he chose to go and serve the people that were living in slum conditions in Hell's Kitchen in New York City. And from that, he wrote the words to this hymn. And it goes like this, the refrain. Where he leads me, I will follow. Where he leads me, I will follow. Where he leads me, I will follow. I'll go with him. I'll go with him all the way. Not just part of the way, not some of the way, but all of the way.